Welcome to the Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. In August 2011, we fell into a ring of fire, stories of getting burned. So hear a highlight from the night on today's podcast. As featured storyteller Heidi Reeder winces through a burning comedic double take.
So this story takes place in a city where I think getting burned may actually be a way of life. I'm talking about Los Angeles, the city of angels where you find mostly devils. Now, I'm a college professor and researcher, and one of the small communities, actually really large communities that I was interested in researching and getting to understand what fuels them is a community I call the Dream Seekers. By this, I mean the thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people from all over the United States, all over the world, really, that come to Hollywood, California every year to try to maximize and actualize their dreams, to become stars or at least working actors. And I wanted to know, what was it like to be part of that group of people? It's really a group that you don't hear very much about. I mean, we know a lot about the big stars, and they're on People magazine, and we know what their lives are supposedly like, right? But what about all of these people that go there trying to find a dream and are there for year after year and are willing to give up just about anything, you know, a steady income, relationships, family, self-esteem, to try to make this dream come true? And so I was going down one summer to do participant observation research, which includes interviewing. So participant observation research means that you kind of live like the people in the community do. And I was really fortunate because, and this was about 10 years ago, I should say, so imagine me 10 years younger, 30 years old, going down and doing this. And so I fit in with the, you know, I fit in pretty well, sort of making my way, taking acting classes and interviewing people and finding out what their life is like. But I was really fortunate to have this objective perspective of being a researcher, where, you know, I wasn't going to get burned by the same scams that were occurring to all of the other young people down there. Right? So I could see what was happening. So for example, when I was hanging out in Santa Monica one day and somebody came up to me and said, hey, come be a part of our modeling agency. And I looked at their materials, I could see right away that this was one of these situations where the supposed model was actually going to pay, right, the agency to represent them. So the agency is making money off of the model, paying them, not the model making money off the agency by getting work. Things like that. Or when I was picking up some documents at a Kinko's near Hollywood Boulevard. And just the act of walking a few blocks from my car to Kinko's in what I considered the traditional summer garb of a cut-off jean skirt and flat sandals and kind of a bohemian blouse led not one but two different men in two different cars to drive up and ask me if I needed a ride. And one of them actually came around the block several times during my walk, making sure I didn't need a ride. And it was actually a little bit scary. And I thought, what if I had been younger? What if I had been there for real? What if I had been desperate? What happens to all of the young women who come from Kansas or Missouri or Alabama seeking their dreams but end up as a call girl or worse? So thankfully, I was not in that position. But anyone who does this kind of immersion research will tell you that there was always going to be a point in the study where one loses one's academic distance, where one begins to take more seriously than perhaps one should their investment in their experience, and may begin, like I said, to lose that more objective, if there is such a thing, perspective. So I was getting some sushi at a little market, and I was standing there staring at the sushi, and this guy comes up to me, and he's staring at the sushi, and we kind of look at each other, and then we look back at the sushi, and we look at each other. And right away, I can tell this guy is one of these in-the-business kind of guys. Now, if you've ever spent any time in Hollywood, California, you know what these people look like, okay? First of all, they look like New Yorkers that have been transplanted to Southern California, right? About 50 years old, dark hair, suit, no tie, and confidence. But in addition to looking like he was in the business, he also looked very familiar to me in a way that I couldn't quite place, but thought, huh, that guy seems kind of familiar. So he asked me, you know, have you decided on your sushi? He asked me, are you an actress? And I said, oh, you know, I've just been here a couple of months. And he says, well, I'd really love to talk with you. Buy your sushi and come out to the parking lot. So I said, okay. Now, I was curious. I mean, who was this guy? I knew that I hadn't met him in the last couple of months there. I would have remembered that. But he really seemed, his face, his voice, everything about him just seemed like I knew him from somewhere, and I couldn't quite place it. So I paid for my sushi, and I go outside, and he's standing at the back of the requisite black Lexus, and his trunk is open. He's got a bunch of artwork in the back, paintings, drawings, things like that. And they were really beautiful. And I said, gosh, wow, did you do those? And he said, yeah, do you like them? And I said, yeah, they're great. Wow, beautiful. And we began to talk about art and philosophy and science and, you know, just this regular stuff you talk about in a parking lot, holding your sushi. And he said, you know, and I was still thinking, yeah, this guy seems really familiar. Where do I know him from? And he says, you know, I'd like to invite you to one of my shows. And I thought, well, an art show or, you know. And he said, well, I'm a performer at the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard. And then all of a sudden it hit me. You see, 10 years before that, I was visiting California as well. 19 years old, I was in Los Angeles visiting a friend of mine, and we decided to go to a comedy club. Well, I was 19, so of course I had to get the fake ID to get in, so I was really excited. I was 19 years old, I was in a comedy club from Oregon, but now here I'm in Los Angeles, it's so exciting, we're sitting near the front, and on top of all of that, there's this comedian that's going to be performing this night, who I've heard of, because there's this great movie out right now, this animated movie called Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Loved that movie, right? Jessica Rabbit, Roger Rabbit, and the comedian who was going to be performing that night was the guy who did the voice for Roger Rabbit. That adorable voice is so cute and so funny. And so the whole time I'm like listening to his comedy, ha ha ha, funny, but get to the voice. You know, I want to hear the voice. This is going to be so much fun. And so finally he gets to sort of the interaction part of the night where he's engaging with the audience. And so I kind of yell out, you know, Roger Rabbit, you know. And he doesn't do the Roger Rabbit voice. And Roger Rabbit, come on, do it. He ignores me. Finally, I plead, why don't you do the Roger Rabbit voice? And he says, why don't you shave your pussy? I look just like this lady in purple over here, like, I'm underage, okay? I'm in here on a fake ID, you know? I'm not even supposed to be. I'm from Oregon. We don't talk that way. I was horrified. I mean, major, public, burn. I just wanted to, you know, that kind of feeling like you're just, no, I'm not here, you know. Totally, totally horrified. I was so angry. The rest of the night, I was so angry. Months later, I hated this guy. Like, who does this guy think he is? I just wanted him to do the cute voice. So humiliated. So humiliated. And now, 10 years later, he's inviting me to come see one of his shows. So he hands me a postcard. It has one of his pieces of artwork on it, and he says, my first gift to you. And I looked on the back, confirmation, Charles Fleischer. But you know what? It was cool. I mean, that was a long time ago. You know, I mean, he seemed like a really great guy, very smart. We were enjoying talking to each other. So I thought, what the heck? If nothing else, it'll be good for the research. You know, go find out what the comedy club life is like, whatever. So after a few email interactions, we set up a date that I was going to go and watch his show. So I arrive right on time at 9 o'clock, and I'm there in my floral summer dress, very excited to be a guest of the comedian, and he's not there. So I waited a while, and it became about 9:45, and he finally showed up and didn't really acknowledge that he was late, you know, just, oh, yeah, whatever, great, come. So we go back behind the stage to the furthest room in the back, you know, way back the stage, and the audience is filling in and all this. And he takes out his backpack and he starts sorting through his CDs that he's going to sell after the show, you know, to kind of like boost his income, right? And his, you know, his artwork that he's going to sell after the show. And he's sorting through and we're having this kind of like witty conversation. And I'm so, you know, proud of myself because I'm kind of like keeping up with the witty conversation. And this is very exciting. And finally he says, okay, well, I gotta go out there, but why don't you tell me a word that you want to make sure that I somehow incorporate into my act? It's like, oh, very clever. No, I didn't say that. I was trying to block that out of my mind. I said, well, I'm from Boise, so to work in Boise somehow. And he said, okay, for every time I say Boise, you have to give me a kiss. And I thought, this guy's good. I mean, I'm sure I'm the only person that he's ever said this to, right? Okay, so I watched the show, and it is amazing. I mean, at 19, I don't think I appreciated how amazingly funny and talented this guy is. He's making connections between, you know, seemingly unrelated things and really bringing it together and making it funny. You know, he never throws an insult out at anyone. I mean, he just does a great job, right? And so then my only job at that point is to figure out how to tell him how great I thought he was without looking like a schoolgirl, right? So the show's over, and he's got to sell his wares and all that, so I'm hanging out with him while he's selling his CDs and talking to people, whatever. The night's going on. Our conversation is getting pretty interesting, you know, a little more intimate, and the customers, if you would say, are starting to dissipate. And I really didn't want the evening to end. I mean, as you can see at this point, I was really losing my academic objectivity. Can you kind of tell? I mean, I was like, wow, I'm here. This is great. And so, you know, I just didn't want the evening to end. I mean, I was just really having a really, really great time. So finally, the ticket guy comes out and he says, "You guys, I'm sorry, you guys have got to go. Like, all the patrons are gone, right?" And I was like, oh, darn, okay. And so Charles says, well, hey, there's a parking lot in the back where there's a bar. And some of the comedians hang out after the show. You want to go to the back parking lot and get a beer? Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do that. Okay, so we go into the back parking lot, and he was right. There was a bar set up back there, and all the comedians' cars were parked there, and there was a lot of the comedians there. I recognized some of them. Andrew Dice Clay was there. I didn't know he was even still doing comedy, but he was back there. And it was, I guess it was still 10, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so he was there, and it was people like that. And so Charles was kind of introducing me to a couple people, and they're going, oh, so you're with Charles tonight, huh? Or you're Charles's guest for the evening, huh? Cool. And all of a sudden, like, it's kind of starting to dawn on me that this is a little weird. Do you know? Like, slowly the self-awareness that had gone away was starting to come back, right? And it was at about this point that Charles kept trying to kiss me, and I kept saying, well, you know, this is awkward. There's people here. I mean, this is embarrassing. Plus, I don't even think we're really on a date. Oh, you know, we are on a date. No, we're not. You know, that was going around in a circle. And so then finally he said, well, let's just get in my car then. And it was at that moment that I realized I was just supposed to be his after the show fun. It didn't occur to me until that moment. And I said, well, no, I'm not going to get in your car, you know. And he said, well, why did you come here? And I did it again. I got burned again. You see, I thought in my delusional mind that this was friendly and that this was, you know, that he liked me as a person and my intellectual repartee. But no, I was just, you know, the after the show girl. Well, fortunately, I made it out of the parking lot safely, with my physical self intact, maybe not my ego, but I was safe. And it was just a few weeks later that it was time for me to come home to Boise. And so I'm taking that drive. If you ever take that drive, you know, it goes Los Angeles, Reno, Boise. And if you've driven it, if you've been away from Boise for a while and you're driving into Boise and you're coming down from the Nampa side, really the thing that strikes you, right, is the Boise foothills. And this was August, and so there was some smoke billowing from the Boise foothills, and I was so happy to be home. I just thought, Boise, Idaho, now that is my kind of burn.
Have you ever wondered what it would take to stand up on stage without notes and tell your story, but then break out in a cold sweat? Well, the Story Studio is designed for you. Held on the third Monday of every month from 7 to 9 p.m. at Colmar Coffee House, the studio is designed to start a story fire under your feet and in your soul. So tonight, September 19th, is your night. Learn more at storystorynight.org. And don't miss our new venue, Rose Room Debut, on September 26th. Earth, stories of reaping what you sow. Now, our musician Dan Costello plays up Heartburn.
This one actually works better in song form, so I will actually play this one. Short edge of it. Met this really cool gal. We were getting along great, and I take off for a trip to Jackson Hole. I'm there all weekend, and I'm trying to get a hold of this gal. I'm trying to call her. I'm trying to text her. She won't get back to me, and I'm really getting kind of weirded out about it. I get back from Jackson Hole. We get together for breakfast, and the first words out of her mouth are, "I met someone. He's from Portland." And the way she said it just burned into my brain. And some friends of mine were staying on the coast in Manzanita. I was heading out there that day, and I was supposed to leave the next day, but I decided to just go home, pile up the car, head out. And I got to Ontario, where there was a huge wildfire that was burning, and I was one of the last cars that they let through, because as I found out, there was not only the fire, but the huge firestorm that was rolling over. The wind and rain, everything was crazy. Couldn't see more than about, maybe 200-300 feet in front of me. So smoky and nasty, and the sun was going down. You could see this crazy orange haze, and I was still smoldering about this whole thing. I finally get to where the fire is, and there is literally a line of fire from the edge of the freeway as far as the eye can see on both directions. And it just just a perfect line of about a 3-foot-tall fire all the way up the whole range. And then after that, I started working on this song in my head to kind of, get over the whole thing. And the clouds broke, and the wind stopped, and there was no more rain. And there were stars coming out and everything. So, yeah, it was pretty amazing. But I did write a song about it. So I'm going to play that real quick. I'll admit I wasn't ready. Things got started wicked fast. But from the moment I first saw you and you smiled and we talked, well, something told me this would last. Oh, then I took a trip to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Oh, you burning bright inside my chest. And though maybe I was better than your last, you claim you found a guy who's bound to be your best. Oh, Rihanna, can I make you understand? Your new guy from Portland, he's just bluffing, he's got nothing in his hand. When he fades in days like I did, you'll be wishing you decided to place your bets on me. Steady, a new guy from Portland. Serendipity described it. Start of our drunken lover's haze. Well, I think Martians could have landed in the background. Still nothing could have torn me from your gaze. Oh, now you were climbing up the charts, girl, with a bullet by your name. But then this guy from P-Town swings in, and then he sinks his fangs in. I can't believe you bought his game. Oh, no. And I cannot make you understand. Your new guy from Portland, he's just bluffing, he's got nothing in his hand. When he fades in days like I did, you'll be wishing you decided to place your bets on me. Steady, a new guy from Portland. Just some new guy from Portland. Well, now I know that you were just the dealer, and he cut the deck so clean. And I don't care if he's holding all the aces, girl, you know you'll always be my queen. Oh, you'll be my queen. Well, now I'm driving out on this highway. Smoke and frustration cloud my sight. But in another 20 miles, I'll be driving through the fire like a phoenix taking flight. Oh, yes, I'm heading out to Manzanita. Yeah. with another bullet in my heart. But then it's up over those coastals and down to the ocean. I'm gonna make a brand new start. Oh, Rihanna, can I make you understand? Your new guy from Portland, he's just bluffing. He's got nothing in his hand. When he fades in days like I did, you'll be wishing you decided to place your bets on me. Steady, your new guy from Portland. Just some new guy from Portland. Or some jackhole from Portland.
Thank you for listening. Story Story Night is brought to you by presenting partner the Boise State Story Initiative, venue partner the Rose Room, design partner Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at boisestatepublicradio.org. Our Story Story Night theme and podcast production are by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week in person on September 26th for Earth, our first Rose Room event. Learn more at storystorynight.org.